Let's get rolling on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. I'm John Williams. It's always a pleasure to visit with Tom Gimbel, founder and CEO at LaSalle Networks. The LaSalleNetwork.com is the website. Welcome back, Tom.
Happy Tuesday, John Williams.
Let's dive into a couple of stories here. One of them is about Medline. We were talking about that on and off the air yesterday. Some pretty big numbers around that company, huh?
How great is that? I begrudge no one making money, and for a Chicago family to make money and still have an interest in the company, and then hopefully that will spawn some of the next generation of their family to do some startups and maybe help the Chicago company, Chicago market continue to grow.
28,000 employees worldwide, revenue of $17.5 billion last year, said it'll use the new investment to accelerate international expansion and strengthen its global supply chain.
It's a good thing. It's a good thing, right? I mean, it's a Chicago company. They took over the Kraft headquarters in Northfield a few years back. They were up in Mundelein. Four generations of family, and it just shows that not every new generation kills a company. So maybe there's some hope for some companies out there.
They make wheelchairs and beds and lab supplies and drugs. I don't know if they make drugs, but they pretty much anything that you'll come into contact with at a hospital or a doctor's office, Medline may have a stamp on that. So props.
Yeah, they're not a pharmaceutical company. Right. They do doctor's gowns. They did masks. I mean, a lot of their income and growth the past year was due to COVID-related stuff. So it's a really interesting time to see people capitalizing on the economy. Not everybody lost money. Some people actually grew, which is kind of a nice thing. And these people, these 28,000 folks or whatever the number was you said, that have jobs and are growing, it's thanks to this family that's been reinvesting in their business and will continue to do so now.
You know, it's funny, and somebody needs to write the story. Maybe they have, I haven't seen it, but how obvious and not so obvious the winners and losers were when the pandemic started. You know, like when the pandemic started, you talk to the people that sell campers, and they thought, this isn't going to be good for us. Well, it was a boon for them. It was wonderful for them. Another example is chlorine tablets. I wonder when the pandemic started, did the guys that make chlorine tablets for swimming pools go, oh, this is going to be good? But it was because pools closed, people couldn't do anything, so they started buying swimming pools, so they needed more chlorine tablets, and they couldn't keep up with demand. It's fascinating to me. And then some people who suffered greatly through no fault of their own and might not have seen it coming, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. But I really do believe we've seen such a rebound over the past 6, 7, 8 months is that there's really two economies we have. And I know we talk about this pretty much every week, but you have this service, restaurant, hospitality vertical, and some of those places really got hit. And then you have the traditional economy, and that if you could separate those two, I really think you'd see the lowest unemployment rate we've had in decades. Nice. And I've never seen anything like this in 25 years in the industry of helping companies find people and helping people find jobs. And so now you're looking as the restaurants bounce back. I was eating at a restaurant yesterday. Well, actually, I'm fasting, but I was sitting in a restaurant yesterday with somebody while they were eating, and it was packed like there had never been COVID. And now you're hearing that they really can't find servers. That's a real problem, and they're not making as much money as they could because they can't service the customers as fast as they'd like.
Yeah, we had less than perfect service at a restaurant over the weekend, and afterwards I just said, I don't think they can get the people. And it was a nice restaurant. It was a high-ticket restaurant, but they were understaffed. They were clearly understaffed. By the way, so when we do go back to the offices, I'm seeing ads for the kind of clothes we're going to wear, and I don't think they're all suits and ties. What are you reading and thinking about all of this?
There's no doubt about it that that business is going to be different in the office, that we're going to be more, it seemed like pre-COVID, we are actually moving back more to sport jackets and slacks for men and a little bit nicer outfits for women. And now we've kind of reverted back to that 5-day-a-week casual wear. And it seems like it's going to stay that way for the foreseeable future. My guess is, like everything else, we're in a cycle. And this cycle of casual wear will go on for a little while, but eventually it turns around either because people are tired of wearing sweatpants and shorts, or they actually were seeing that somebody dresses up and it starts to be follow the leader. And people forget so often in business that it really is follow the leader. It wasn't free food and snacks until Google started doing it. Then everybody followed. And then now companies are going away, remote work, everybody follows. Now they're bringing them back 3 days a week, everybody's following. So it's just a matter of time. But it'll be business casual with jeans and nice shirts for the foreseeable future.
For the foreseeable future. But if it was traditionally a more buttoned-up atmosphere, you think it'll eventually get back to that?
Absolutely. I mean, it was going that way anyways. And people always want everything to be in such extremes, never and always. And it just isn't that way. You know, we saw years ago that bankers on the West Coast, they would dress without a tie and they'd be in slacks and jeans. On the East Coast, they'd still wear suits and ties and, you know, $4,000 suits. It just depends on where you're located, what line of business you're in, and everything isn't for everybody. And the companies that do the best will set the trends and everybody else will fall in line.
Tom, before I let you go, I know you and Pete were talking about how to recover from a failure or a mistake that you make in the virtual world. What's on your mind there?
Well, it's so funny that we're in this situation where people are alone, and so the premise is that I can work alone. There's less pressure when I'm by myself, but there's no outside distractions. But what really has happened is that people are making mistakes at work because that's what people do. We're human beings. We make mistakes, and there's no one to go to. No. And you kind of live in your own misery at home, and you're afraid to talk to people about it. And the key thing that people have to realize is whether you're remote or in the office, own your mistake, and you have to reach out as soon as possible and let people know who are above you on the food chain that this mistake is happening or happened and that you're there to fix it. But when you hide behind Zoom or you hide behind being remote or not being able to see anybody, you can really get lost in your own mistake. And if you acknowledge it, you're going to bounce back and you're going to be stronger than ever. So isolation causes a lot more problems than people give it credit for.
I hadn't thought about that. Tom Gimbel's the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network, thelasallenetwork.com. Thanks, Tom.
Stay well. Talk to you next week.
Father's Day is next weekend. You know, it's funny because moms and kids don't need to be reminded of it so much because moms are thoughtful. And when Mother's Day comes around, it seems like dads need to be reminded a lot. But there's Father's Day. And Kate Tweston's on a phone line, Senior Merchandise Manager at Paper Source, which might not be the first place you think of when you think about shopping for dad, but watch this. Hey, Kate, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. I saw in your inventory of possible gifts something that we've kind of capitalized on here, dad jokes. There's a dad jokes book out there, right?
Yes. Yep. One of our best sellers. Definitely great for Father's Day. We found that, you know, our customer really seems to like humor, especially for this season. That's one of my favorites.
And I think that maybe that would be a good seller any Father's Day. But coming out of the pandemic, we've been telling jokes on the radio every day at 9:35, kind of dad jokes, and people love it either because they're funny or because it's not talking about how bad things were for the last year. So the timing and location for that are very good for you, I'll say.
Yes, yeah, that's absolutely right. I think we've seen the same thing, that people after this year are wanting to, you know, have a laugh, and I think we're going to see that continue through the rest of this year in the summer, definitely.
We see Paper Source stores throughout Chicagoland. It started here in Chicago, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So we were founded back in 1983, so we've been open for over 35 years, based here in Chicago. Our offices are right downtown, and we have an in-house design team that does a lot of the development for some of our products, like our greeting cards and other gifts. But we have stores across the country. So whatever city you're located in, you should be able to find us there.
Cards, gifts, wrapping, stuff like that, as well as a selection of gifts. But a lot of that, it would seem to me, would be in sort of competition with the digitization of a lot of these things. Has business dropped off over the years because I can just email you a greeting, or how has that affected you guys?
Yeah, that's a really interesting comment. You know, we've been fortunate enough that we have an incredibly loyal customer that loves our in-store experience. So, of course, with the pandemic, we had to make a lot of pivots and definitely grew our e-commerce business in a big way. But we found that now that restrictions are lifting a little bit and people are vaccinated and excited to get out and shop, that they're returning to our stores. And I think there's something so special about you know, coming into shop and being able to browse the wall of cards that we offer and pick something special. So we've actually seen some really strong results in our stores, even given all of the headwinds.
The stores are about open back up. Are you on June 11th going to be at 100% capacity then?
I believe so, yes. And of course, Chicago area, you know, that's where I'm more familiar with since that's where we're based. But we're looking forward to the restrictions being lifted across the country.
I also noticed, just I was looking at your inventory, you have two things that you, or at least one thing that I think is really neat, is the custom rubber stamp, which, because to me, a handwritten card or a note is just so much more meaningful. And if you stamp it with something that you've personalized, it makes it more meaningful still. You guys sell those, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great gift. I think one thing that we find is a lot of people use that for engagement gifting. So, you know, when you're changing your last name, it's a great option to add in. But that's a great seller for us and a heritage product for PaperSource.
Exclusive papers from around the world. What does that mean?
Yeah, so we were founded, really, our founder was an avid traveler, and so she would travel and find amazing products and specifically find papers in her international travels, and that's really what she started selling at our first location. Since then, we've grown to carry not only fine papers, but exclusive greeting cards, exclusive wrapping paper, that's all designed by our team here in Chicago. So that's something really special that you won't find anywhere else.
Was the pandemic hard for you all, or maybe because people were crafting at home or trying to find some means of expression, business was good? How did the pandemic affect you all?
Yeah, I think in general, we, like I mentioned earlier, had to focus on just pivoting in the way that our customer wanted us to. So I think a big piece of that was just the at-home activity portion of things. So whether that was people getting back into crafting, scrapbooking, journaling, we also started offering virtual workshops on our website. So you could sign up for those online and take a workshop to learn something new. So that was one way that we kind of adjusted given everything happening.
Yeah, right. And so the stores, at least for a period of time, probably had to close, but you guys are open now. Has the product line changed? Or you mentioned pivoting earlier, and a lot of businesses now find that they are going to do business somewhat differently as a result of having gone through this learning curve. Will paper sources be any different down the road now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing we're really thinking about this summer is just as people are returning back to some of those activities that they did prior to the pandemic and wanting to just celebrate a little bit more. So one thing we're really seeing is just kind of summer fun, entertaining, cooking, outdoor getaways. So whether you're traveling domestically this summer, trying to offer products that help to kind of support those new hobbies. So that's one way that we're adjusting. And then continuing to focus on our online and digital business. One thing that's been really successful for us this year is our curbside pickup option. So now, you know, if you want to shop online, you can still get things delivered directly to you, but you could also order ahead and go and pick up your product at your local store. So that's been a way that we're just focusing on convenience and ease for the customer.
I'm reading from CNBC.com. Elliott Investment Management, the people that own Barnes & Noble, are acquiring or did the PaperSource. What does that mean for the brand? What does that mean for the employees? Do you know?
Yeah. It's a really exciting update. So it just in the last 2 weeks, the sale was finalized by Elliott. So we're really looking forward to kind of growing with a new partner that has, you know, a big focus on brick and mortar and really believes in the future of stores. So at the present moment, there's really no change to PaperSource operations. We'll still be operating our 130 stores across the country, but hopeful for some additional growth opportunity in the future as we see things through.
I'll see your products in their stores, maybe?
There's a potential for that, yes. Still in very, very early stages of discussion, but more to come there.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there's a certain symmetry, what with you all being paper products and all, so it would not strike me as illogical. Well, I'm glad to hear that things are going well, and I'm anxious for the what sounds like a positive future for the Paper Source Senior Merchandise Manager, Kate Tweston. And don't forget Father's Day. Interesting gifts and cards for Dad there. Nice to talk to you, Kate. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much.
John Williams here. This is interesting. So Let Us Entertain You Restaurants, the famous brand of restaurants throughout Chicago and also the country, turns 100 years, not today or tomorrow, but Thursday. I said 100 years, didn't I? 50 years. I noticed, though, that one of the milestones was when they passed 100 restaurants. 50 years on Thursday. How about that? Kevin Brown is on the phone line, the CEO of Let Us Entertain You. Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us, and thank you for the cheesecake you guys sent over. Did you know you sent us a great big cheesecake?
Absolutely, John. It's great to be here. Thank you. Yes, enjoy it. That's an important dessert in our company.
How so? What's so signature
and
about
our family?
What's so signature about the cheesecake?
Well, Rich's wife, Martha, started experimenting with it in the late 70s, early 80s, and she had perfected it for RJ, their first child's birthday. And the boys, RJ and Jared and Molly, when they did Hub 51, they wanted to put it on the menu, and everybody thought, well, that's really nice, but it may not sell, and it has become the best seller, and it's a terrific cake. So it's really kind of part of our culture and our organization. It's really important.
I was looking at the names of the restaurants, and I have in front of me sort of a timeline of Let Us Entertain You, and there's a lot of fun memories, I think, for anybody that's dined in Chicago over the last 50 years. I'm looking at names like Jonathan Livingston Seafood, the Great Gritsby's Flying Food Show, you know, early on in the company's history. And then it evolves, of course, over the years. All of that to say this, as much fun as some of these places are, the food has to be good, though, right? I mean, that's got to be the foundation of any successful restaurant.
It's what we stand for. It's the first thing, and it's what everything is about. We have a test kitchen right outside of our offices. Everything you hear in organizations starts with the food and starts with the taste. I mean, that's what guests come to us. I'm proud of the people that work for us, but you've got to put a great product on the table.
Well, you were the first hire by Rich Melman, right?
Well, not really. The first hire out of a college program. He went to a college campus to interview, which he only did a few times, I think, in his career. I was the first interview and the first person hired.
No kidding.
And that was 44 years ago.
Hired as what, a cook or as an executive to help run things?
No, as a night manager at RJ Grunts. And when we ranked, you know, number of manager, was the number four manager at RJ Grunts. I mean, literally, that in the management area, that's the totem pole. That is where the totem pole begins.
And RJ took a few months to take off, too, right? It wasn't a hit instantly, was it?
It wasn't, which is, you know, it's good for you to know, because it was a lot of persistence. I don't know if it took 3 months. I wasn't with the company when it first started. I came 6 years later. But it wasn't perfect, right? It didn't come out of the box, and Rich was worried. But then, you know, things started to click, and I think one night it just turned into magic, and the place was packed, and we never looked back.
I was looking at the list of people that populated it in some of those early years. Sometimes it's somebody. Maybe it's Irv Cups in it. Maybe it's Bobby mm-hmm. Douglas. Maybe it's Oprah Winfrey. But if somebody says, hey, I had a good experience, and it tips, then you're on your way, aren't you?
You have to deliver it every day, right? You can have one or two good experiences, but you really have to get known for doing it on a regular basis. And I think we've been really good about also partnerships inside and outside of our company. And Rich has been terrific in sorts of, you know, meeting new people, bringing new people on. Plus, the core of our operational strength are the partners that really embody our philosophies and operating standards inside the company. That's very important to us.
Kevin Brown's on a phone line, the CEO of Let Us Entertain You. Tell me two stories. One about an idea you all had that didn't go well, because it seems like you have a golden touch. And tell me one that did, but that you doubted. You thought, I'm not so sure a virtual restaurant's a good idea. I mean, can you tell me a success story and a not success story?
Well, the success story that I think it was kind of interesting is we did a restaurant called Maggiano's, and early on, the reviews came out, and they were like satisfactory, one star, half star, and yet the restaurant was packed every night. And so you don't always, the critic doesn't always know what the guest wants. And I think you just sort of let, you know, I think Rich and the company sort of trusted their gut and how good this would be. And it turned out to be, you know, obviously they're all around the country now. We don't run them around the country any longer. but became a really success story for us. And I think there was a restaurant that we did, in fact, called The Eccentric, that probably wasn't what we expected it to be. But fortunately, it turned into two of our most successful restaurants. We converted it into Wildfire and Big Bowl out of the same space. And I think that's one of our strengths is we just, you know, we're relentless on saying we've got to keep making these places better day to day. And so we never gave up on it. And today they both are thriving today.
That's interesting.
Many years later.
The Eccentric was a partnership with Oprah Winfrey, was it not?
Right. And I think it, you know, in and of its own nature, it was. But, you know, when you have a celebrity restaurant, it's difficult. We never expected her to be there. We never really expected it to be what if it was Oprah's restaurant. We never expected that her to be that. We wanted her involvement and her commitment, but we never expected her to be there as much. And a lot of other guests wanted to see her there. But it turned into something really good.
I saw people craning their necks when they'd walk by Michael Jordan's, wondering if he was there, as though he was going to work as the maitre d', you know, the front of the house. And those, I guess, celebrity endorsements can be double-edged swords, but that's not really how you all have cut your teeth. You guys have just been, I think, a brand people know and consistent, a consistent brand for people as well.
Well, and I appreciate that. You know, there's no one restaurant called Let Us Entertain You. And we want, if you see it's a Let Us Entertain You restaurant, we want that to sort of embody that you're going to have a quality experience. And I think we do everything in our power. We let the restaurants have their own identity, but they all have to sort of represent for the rest of the company. And that's how we sort of maintain our reputation and our standards.
Do you guys still have Twin City Grill at the Mall of America?
We do, fortunately, reopened. You know, it was difficult, obviously, during pandemic, but no, it's been there for a long time and does well for us.
Yeah, I believe that's where I got the meatloaf that I liked. And
you're from Minneapolis, aren't you?
Spent a lot of time up there, and that's, listen, if you go to the Mall of America, and you
you're from Chicago, but you lived in Minneapolis,
that
right?
That is all correct, sir. And in Minneapolis, in Minnesota, they do not have a sales tax on clothes, so people will leave Chicago, go up there, spend a lot of money at the Mall of America, and if you're going to spend the day there, go to Twin City Grill or Twin City. That's it, right? Yeah, Twin City Grill.
That's it, Twin City Grill.
Yeah,
right.
And enjoy the food there. Listen, congratulations. We're going to enjoy the beautiful looking, I'm sure it's delicious too, cheesecake that you all sent over. 50 years
great.
On Thursday. Let Us Entertain You. Thanks for joining
us.
You'll
make us all proud. You'll make Martha Melman proud. It's a great dessert.
Amen to that. Well, thank you, sir, and congratulations.
Thank you for all your support.
Kevin Brown is the CEO, Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. Okay, let's continue on the business front on WGN with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The newest grocery offering from Bob Mariano opened today in Lincoln Park. Dom's is located at 2730 North Halsted. The concept combines grocery shopping, restaurant dining, and food delivery. The store features more than a dozen show kitchens, including one with made-to-order pizzas, rotisserie chickens, and roasted vegetables. There's also a floral shop. Dom's has coffee in the morning and wine in the evening. Mariano has teamed up with Jay Owen, the grandson of Dominic's co-founder, and Don Fitzgerald, a former senior executive at Dominic's. The Lincoln Park location is the first of 10 Dom stores planned in the coming 5 years. The focus of a Chicago startup is keeping firefighters and victims safe during emergency situations and helping firefighters better communicate with each other. Ascent Integrated Tech makes sensor and communication capabilities designed for respiratory masks commonly used by firefighters. Chicago Inno reports the technology is installed into existing equipment and allows the firefighters to receive signals about where to go inside burning buildings and when to evacuate. The sensors also track things like heart rate and body temperature. The platform also helps fire department commanders monitor live situations. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's your business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yes, sir. The business of food is one of the most dangerous businesses, and one of the most dangerous places to be is the grain bin. Every year, a few dozen farmers get trapped in grain bins, and quite often they die when the grain swallows them up. They go in there to dislodge grain that clumps up and gets stuck and needs to be moved around. If only there were a robot that could do that work.
The Grain Weevil is a grain bin safety and management robot.
That's Ben Johnson of Omaha, a longtime builder of robots and one of the inventors of the Grain Weevil. And the idea for it came from a family friend's plea to build him a robot so he and his kids never have to go into a grain bin again.
It scurries across the top of the grain using auger-based drive, and this allows us to maneuver on top of the grain as well as manipulate the grain.
The Grain Weevil is about 18 inches by 20 inches, and the only comparison I can think of is the Roomba.
Which we don't mind. Roombas are very successful, but we hope to be maybe a little smarter than the Roombas and be able to complete some different tasks that are more specific to inside of the grain bin.
A half dozen Grain Weevil prototypes are about to be sent out to farms for testing, and once all of the regulatory hurdles are cleared, Ben and his business partner and father, Chad Johnson, hope to have it on the market by 2023. And just as farmers have found great cost and time savings with robotic milkers and equipment that can be run autonomously, the Grain Weevil has that same potential.
If you load the bin and you need to level it, you can just tell the robot to level the bin, head home for the night, come back in the morning, and it's level.
There's a real cool video of a Grain Weevil prototype just chugging along on top of a pile of grain inside a bin doing its thing. And you can see that and a lot more about the robot at grainweevil.com. And beyond geeking out about the robotics, it is a potential lifesaver. After Chicago Board of Trade, volatility continues to rule LaSalle Street. Double-digit losses yesterday, double-digit gains today. Right now, soybeans are up 25. Corn is up about 3.5. It's backed off a lot from its session highs. And wheat now is also down, but it's still higher for the day, up 3.5 cents. From the farm to your belly, there's nothing really special about today, but it is National Soul Food Month. Bring on the collard greens and black-eyed peas and cornbread. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth, two things to talk about. The new Apple product, but also let's start with the global glitch that took place. A lot of websites had trouble today, didn't they, Amy?
Yeah, they certainly did. Earlier this morning, there were a number of really large websites that were either out completely or suffering partial outages. And you know, we're talking about the New York Times, CNN, Britain's government homepage. Even there were some Amazon pages, the Financial Times, Reddit, Twitch, The Guardian, some really, you know, big names. To me, this kind of points at just how interconnected it all is and how reliant our entire online world is on just a few companies. So this is all, these were all using Fastly. They're based in San Francisco. They did acknowledge the problem. They said they had no reason to believe it was a hacker or anything nefarious, said that it's been identified, a fix has been applied. And, you know, their services are supposed to be a little bit harder to get to this stage because they're all cloud-based. They use multiple servers instead of just kind of one centralized one. They have all these backups. So these are, you know, these are sites that were on there ostensibly because they're much harder to, or they're much, you know, less likely to have an outage, but nonetheless, large scale outage earlier this morning. But it was pretty much resolved by mid-morning. There were still plenty of, you know, people bemoaning that on social media sites.
I woke up to that announcement and I thought, oh, here we go. It shows how important and interconnected things are. Even a glitch of a few hours is a big deal across the globe.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Apple. I said product, but it's software, right, that they're launching.
My goodness, there's so much new stuff. This Apple, the Worldwide Developers Conference that happens every year, it's always really interesting to watch because they really talk about in depth of all these new products and features that are coming up. And so some of the products that I thought were really interesting that deal with that you and I will see in our lives, some of them were bigger developer things like taking 2D models into 3D in a more seamless way. But for the average person, some of the changes coming are really interesting. So the new operating system is called Monterey, and you can share a keyboard and a mouse with an iPad now. So you can, you know, hand someone an iPad and be demonstrating something on your laptop and be demonstrating it for them on the iPad. They're also, they're going to be some changes with FaceTime that's going to make it a little more like Zoom. So for, you know, messages that you receive, text messages, you can save those. you're going to get an away message. But for FaceTime itself, in terms of just looking at another person in a call, you can start scheduling that. So you can send someone a link and say, hey, 2 o'clock, meet me here. We'll talk and we'll do this FaceTime call. But I think the entire, you know, interpersonal communication part of it was really interesting to see what all would be there, you know, in terms of messaging. And there's an away message feature that I thought was really interesting. If you ever use the do not disturb function on your iPhone, they're going to introduce a focus mode, and that will notify people, if you want, that you're in focus mode. So I could text you and I get a message back to say, hey, John's working on something right now. He'll talk to you in a little bit. He'll text you when he can, which I thought was really interesting. Also, AirPods are going to have a new feature called the Conversation Boost, which I thought was very interesting, in which you can adjust them to drown out ambient noise or to focus on a person that's in front of you talking. Say you're trying to talk to someone in a really loud environment, your AirPods can kind of help you communicate with them. And they will have some Siri integration too, so you can have Siri read text messages and even other kinds of alerts beyond that, which I thought was really fascinating.
Here's another thing that evidently they're going to do. If you're not walking very steadily, your phone would know
it,
and it would update you that may be having a medical issue.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. So it's going to measure balance, coordination, and stability, and it will send you an alert if you feel, if it seems like you might be at risk of falling, which I think will be really fascinating to see how that works out. And lots of other kind of health data updates, a little more deeper health records, things like that. So a lot of changes coming from Apple.
More about that down the road. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch.